Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Thriving Marriage. My name is Heather Choate, and as always, I'm here with Mark Johnston, our international marriage expert.
How are you? I'm doing great, or at least as best as I can, given the circumstances. I mean, it's all, you know, I've been talking to a lot of clients recently. It's been a little bit rough, at least in my household, other people's households. But we're doing well enough here.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to be honest, like I've definitely had some struggling moments, definitely more stress, definitely more chaos and uncertainty going on in my life, just like everyone else. But I was commenting with my husband last night, especially after a really hard day with now being my children's homeschooling teacher, which I wasn't planning on being, right? Like everyone else, like unless you were homeschooling before. And so I've got 5 girls and then 3 older boys. And my oldest daughter is like, oh yeah, she's not happy about me being her authority figure for her schooling. And so anyway, my husband and I were just kind of talking about the end of the day about how, you know, things have been really challenging and how we didn't expect any of this to happen. And he's like, you know what, Heather, though, you are handling this like so much better than you used to. And I didn't even like really realize that. And I was thinking about why that is. And it's true, because I feel like I have more tools now to handle stressful situations, to handle going through hard times, to handle the unexpected, to recenter myself when I feel like I'm getting a little away from who I really am. When I feel that stress piling on, when I feel the pressure piling on, I feel like I have tools now that I didn't have before to be able to process through those things and to get through it. And I feel like, you know, sometimes we have these mountainous waves that hit us and knock us down. And before I've just kind of let them hit me and take me down to the bottom of the ocean. But now I feel like I've got tools. I've got like a paddle. I've got a rowboat or something, you know, to help bring myself back up and get through it. And so I'm just really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for the things that I've learned from you, Mark, and how to better understand my partner, Ben, and how to connect with him and support him and help us understand each other. And so it's just a really beautiful thing. And we're going to be talking today about igniting your intimacy, which really, I think, goes really well with this. And it's going to be interesting as we kind of unfold this discussion, because our listeners, you know, we have people all on the different ends of the spectrum here, right? We have those that are striving to thrive in their marriage, and they're really connected and they're really working together as a team. And then we have the majority of our audience would be on the opposite end of that, where their spouse wants out of the marriage, they're checked out, maybe they're having an affair, there's like major challenges and situations going on there. And so we want to do our best to serve all of you and make sure that we have clarity about what intimacy really is and how to build that, even if maybe you are on one end of the intimacy spectrum and your spouse is on the opposite end. Maybe you're really wanting to connect and they do not. Maybe they have the door closed on intimacy and any of the different areas of intimacy, which we'll share in a little bit. And we're gonna give you some solutions to that. Today is going to be, I was looking over, we always outline kind of our notes. Today is going to be really impactful and really some practical things that you can do in your marriage to be able to increase the connection between both of you. So before we get to that, and I see some of us joining us live, so thank you and welcome. We want to share a client win of the week. And this one was given to us with permission to share from Kevin. He says, more positive since the weekend. Wife is finally, oh my goodness, I can't read, hold on. Wife is talking about finding apartments for her new job and is asking for my advice. She is also asking if it would be enough space for both of us if we end up deciding to stay together or get back together. She also asked if I'd be willing to live in Idaho because she applied for a job here or there. I can see her start to see a future with me again. And this right here, when we see a spouse that's starting to see a future together, that's opening up this conversation about maybe this will work, maybe we can share a space together, maybe we can both move to a different state together, is a huge win and a huge sign of progress being made. So Kevin, congratulations. That's awesome. Keep up the good work. And I just want to send a huge shout out. I've seen in the Thriving Marriage group here, incredible people. Like, you are guys just inspire me so much, because even in the midst of this pandemic here with COVID-19 going on, you guys are taking action. You're working on yourself, like we talked about last week, and you're working on your marriage. So just, you guys inspire me, and keep up the good work, because we can't control what happens to us, but we always control what we do about it. So awesome job there. All right, so intimacy. Let's start right off the bat by defining what intimacy really is. Because Mark, I don't know about you, but I hear a lot of people have confusion about what this is.
I like to just start it off because, you know, sometimes when I start asking people about intimacy, they immediately start, you know, talking to me about their sex life, and that's not what we're talking about. Even when I'm talking with clients and we've kind of established a definition, they'll sometimes, you know, exchange the two words in terms of like being intimate and having intimacy. And certainly having a healthy sex life is a very intimate sort of thing within a marriage. But, you know, when we're specifically talking about intimacy, it's specifically talking about that closeness, that familiarity. And growing relationships, it's that intimacy depends a whole lot on feelings of safety, acceptance, comfort. It really, really plays a lot off of that. And, you know, I want you to kind of take a notice here, like think about your own relationship and when you felt very close to your partner, you know, what kind of moments those have been. And I would put money on it if I were the kind of person to make bets, that the moments when you've probably felt the closest to your spouse have been moments when you felt the most accepted, the most safe, the most comfortable with them, when there's been a lot of trust, when there's been a lot of those good feelings. And so, you know, when Heather is mentioning here, like about talking about, you know, being on different ends of the spectrum in terms of intimacy, we encounter a lot of clients like that, right, Heather? We encounter a lot of people where one spouse is pulling away and they're saying, I don't want anything to do with you. And then we have our clients typically who are like, you know, I need to feel that closeness right now. In terms of intimacy, I just want to establish a couple other things here. You know, it's completely normal if on the short term there's a drop in intimacy. This is a normal process in any relationship. It happens even in really healthy relationships as you go about your day, or as you have arguments, or as you make up. I'll just admit, like right now, with stress being a bit higher, I would say, you know, my wife and I are doing good, but you know, I notice there's a little bit more distancing. Simply because, you know, at the end of the day, we're needing a little bit more extra time to recharge and just kind of like not have someone ask us to do something. So, you know, Jen and I talk about this and we're like, okay, we're just a little bit extra stressed. We're doing good and we're going to create moments where we can connect. But what I'm saying is moments like that are normal. I imagine where a lot of you are concerned is more these longer term sort of losses in intimacy. And before we get really deep into this, I want to establish when is it right to be concerned and when do you not really need to worry about it. So in terms of when to be concerned, you know, you should start asking questions or start to say, okay, is this a good situation? If that tension that you're feeling or those arguments that you've been having are lasting longer than a day or so. I don't know how the dynamics are between you and Ben, Heather. But I know for Jen and I, we don't like to sit on our arguments for very long. I personally don't think it's very healthy. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, you're asking me for real.
Yeah, I'm asking you for real.
That's funny. Right. Yeah, no. And if you have been listening to the podcast maybe for a while, then you've heard me talk about how like any kind of tension or him withdrawing at all, like emotionally, and communication would cause me to kind of freak out and force kind of a discussion about it. And now we see those kind of, I guess, warning signs much sooner. And we give that kind of understanding and that grace to each other so that they don't become huge explosive episodes anymore that then cause further distancing between us. But yeah, now we're able to give each other that space if we need it and definitely work on solving those problems. Like I mentioned with my own personal like toolbox, I feel like, for handling my own mindset and my own emotional processing, we definitely have those tools now in our marriage that we didn't have before so that we're able to resolve problems much quicker.
So the reason, part of the reason why I am saying, not maybe longer than a day, is because you start sitting on this long enough, and I see a lot of patterns where people sit on the arguments for a long time, and then things just go away. And the reason why this is a bit concerning is because those sort of arguments, those situations were never resolved. They just were forgotten. And because of that, the likelihood for that to build up some extra resentment, I would say it's pretty high. And so that's when you need to start asking yourself, okay, why is my partner, still really tense and uncomfortable? Typically, if they are keeping that up, it's probably them trying to express in possibly an unhealthy way that they don't like what's going on, and you should ask about that. Other concerning moments, if there's been a gradual decline that lasts, say, longer than a month, and you haven't actually addressed that decline there. So, like I said, the pandemic's been going on, and as I mentioned, for me in my marriage, there has been a little bit of a decline. But Jen and I are talking about that, and we are keeping tabs on it, and we're making sure, okay, this is an okay situation for both of us. And because we have that dialogue going, it's fine. Or, other moments when you do need to be a bit more concerned is when that distancing behavior is really different or more extreme than the normal ups and downs. So, for example, if they just stop talking to you and that's not a normal part of your arguments, or if this is a way of communicating, or just anything else, like they start yelling and they don't normally yell, or if they just whatever is something out of the norm, what I see that as, it's a way of communicating that they're way more upset than normal, and they're trying to find some way desperately to tell you that. They just don't have a better way to say it. So I imagine some of you have probably seen these situations, and this is what we want to talk about today, is okay, how do we get from that, these longer term, more concerning intimacy problems to something, a bit better?
I love, hold on, before we go on any further, I just love that you shared that take these as warning signs that they're trying to communicate something, even if it's not in a healthy, very productive way, because then that right there allows us to bring in the understanding. I don't know about you, Mark, but I am not a great, I haven't always been a great master at communicating how I'm feeling, right? And we aren't really taught these things. And so just know, like, I think all of us could probably raise our hand. I haven't always shared how I'm feeling the very best way, right? We probably all say that. And so if our spouse is doing that to us, then we can also understand maybe where that's coming from. And knowing that they're trying to communicate something gets beyond the symptom of it, which we talked about last week in our do's and don'ts to reconnect with your spouse. Instead of focusing on the symptom of they're arguing with me more, or they're stonewalling me, or they're removing themselves more, like they're withdrawing more emotionally or communication or physically or sexually. And so instead of fixating on the behavior, we want to understand what's causing the behavior, right? So that we can actually resolve what's going on there. So what really causes some of these, you know, these drops, these disparities in intimacy?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because, you know, just like we were talking about maybe short-term or long-term or more concerning drops in intimacy, there are specific, you know, I'm sure you can notice specific moments when you feel less close to your husband or wife. You know, especially, you're going to especially see this, of course, during arguments and fights. That's when, like, that tension is present, when people don't feel understood or accepted. So especially if you are seeing a lot of arguments and fights and tension, it's going to be, you know, of course you're going to see a drop in intimacy. This is maybe why after, you know, I don't know, this might seem obvious, but sometimes I get people who are a bit surprised. They're like, well, we just had an argument, so I was trying to make it up and I'm trying to snuggle with my wife and she just pushes me away. I get comments like that and I'm just like, well, there's a reason here. It's right in front of you. So yes, of course, if there's more tension between the two of you, this is going to cause some drops in intimacy. Now, sometimes what happens here, this drop in intimacy is a bit more internal. Your partner is kind of processing this. They're feeling that tension, but not letting you know about it. And so as one partner starts to interpret the interactions of in a relationship differently than another person, we start getting a little bit of this disparity, exactly like those comments I was just saying, like where the husband's saying, why isn't my wife wanting to snuggle up with me? Well, it's because of all the stuff going on inside where, you know, in this hypothetical wife is saying, well, he's upset with, and I'm upset and I don't want to do all this, and it's not being communicated. So then what happens is this distant partner typically says to themselves a lot of those things, that I've been hurt and coming closer isn't going to be pleasant, that the other partner, my husband here, doesn't care, and they start pushing that pursuing partner away. And we start getting these bigger and bigger divides in intimacy until, you know, I'm sure some of you are seeing that huge divide right now. It's all that internal processing without really sharing that kind of creates the situation where people are not understanding why their partner has pulled away. Yeah. I don't know if you can hear the train in the
background. It's still going. COVID doesn't stop the train. No. Yeah. So when I'm thinking from a mindset perspective, right, why we withdraw from someone, think back even to earliest childhood. Every single one of us has felt like we were vulnerable at some point, right? Where we shared something really precious to us, or we allowed maybe a friend to you know, see a part of ourselves that we don't normally share, or a family member, and then they broke our trust, right? Maybe they told our big secret to someone else, or maybe they decided not to be our friend anymore, or our parents scolded us for the thing that we shared or ignored it, right? And so we felt that wound, that hurt. Anytime we are being creating that connection, there's a level of trust, right? There's this connection between trust and intimacy, right, Mark? Mm-hmm. We are putting ourselves in a vulnerable situation and trusting that the other person is going to protect that part of ourselves. And in marriage, this becomes, I believe, like the most essential part of a relationship is that trust and that protection of one another. There's a beautiful quote, and I'm gonna not get it completely right, but that marriage is the ultimate connection. It allows us to take off our masks and see that we were beautiful, worthy, and deserving all along. And that's like the kind of connection that we all crave. I mean, some of us have so many wounds that it's even hard for us to admit that. And I've seen so many like internal struggles and limiting beliefs surrounding this idea of being vulnerable and being safe and allowing it to be okay. And I just want to make the point here that it isn't always something that the partners are doing to each other. Sometimes it's something that's come from really, really early on in our lives and our childhood, where we feel like I'm not safe. If I share this about myself, if I allow someone to see that I'm less than perfect, maybe that was mine, just saying, right? Then I'm not going to be good enough and I'm going to be hurt. If I allow people to see who I really am or to see how I really feel, if I give them my vulnerability and allow, like, if I try to trust them and they break that, that is so painful. So I'm not going to open up. I'm not going to share that with myself, with my partner. And sometimes not even with yourself. So if you're really going to dig into like where the real roots of all this is, really look at what causes me to shy away from even knowing who I really am with myself, with having a safe, open relationship with myself, I guess, if that makes sense. Because we know that the things that we crave from our spouse, we first have to find them within ourselves. That's the way that we can then be open to having them with our partner. I feel like I'm a little bit rambling here, but I'm trying to share.
No, I get what you're saying. And, you know, one of the things that we teach here with High Thrive Coaching, we talk about like what actually builds trust or intimacy. It's exactly what you're saying there. It's, you know, it requires someone to be open or vulnerable. And then if that vulnerability is then accepted, and then ideally there's a lot of positive feedback given, like it's appreciated, right, then it creates a cycle where more vulnerability can be extended and then more acceptance, and it goes back and forth. And exactly what you said there is, you know, you get to this deeper level of vulnerability sometimes, and it can really, really sting when you've been that open and then that vulnerability is made to be painful. Mm-hmm. And that right there is going to specifically cause a really big, drop in intimacy. Sometimes that lasts quite a long time, maybe years, maybe across many relationships. I encounter many couples where one of the partners has experienced abuse or other, you know, extreme problems in childhood, and it creates a lot of problems within the marriage, as that partner guards themselves quite a bit more, is less open, is less trusting. And of course, that then causes problems with intimacy. Maybe not that physical side quite as much, because that feels safe, but certainly in many cases, that emotional side of intimacy.
Right. Yeah. And so let's talk now about what not to do, and then some what to do's to help prepare that. And just knowing that we can never control our partner, right? But there are things that we can do to encourage safety and to encourage that feeling of it's okay to open up, it's okay to be vulnerable, and I can be accepted as I do that. As we make help our partner feel that, and as we feel that ourselves, right, that's how we create that closeness and that incredible, beautiful bond that we have in our, what we want to have in our marriages. To me, like, the intimacy in marriage is the most sacred, and it is like the highest level of intimacy that we could experience in any relationship at all. I mean, you talk about sharing your lives together. You talk about sharing, you know, your sexuality together. And that is like literally one flesh becoming one, like the Bible talks about. Like, you have so much closeness with your partner that it's an incredible, beautiful thing. And when it's not where it needs to be, then we definitely want to heal that and give some guidance on how to repair that if it's been broken, and if these longer term type issues are coming up, right? So let's talk about what not to do, Mark. So yeah. If they're able to talk about the relationship, what should they do? And then if they're maybe not able to talk about the relationship, what should they do?
Yeah. Like Heather says, it really depends on where things are at and how open your spouse is. But if you are able to talk a little bit about the relationship, I hear some of the same mistakes over and over again. And one of the things that I'll hear is, you know, people will come to talk about the relationship and their complaints come out. You know, the partner will say, okay, I want to talk, let's work things out. And what comes out of their mouth is, look, you're not doing this for me. You're not supporting me. You don't love me enough. You don't care about me. And I get where that's coming from. It's coming from this, you know, desire to resolve problems and to fix things. You say, okay, if I tell my partner about the things that are going wrong, then they know what's wrong and then they'll fix it. And especially if you're trying to rebuild that intimacy there, it's going to be a big mistake. Because a lot of those complaints, it's specifically demonstrating that lack of acceptance or that closeness. And in many cases, this is you actively telling your partner you are unacceptable. You're not doing well enough. And so you might say, well, what do I do then? Like, you know, if I can't complain, how do I get my partner to change things? And seems to be like a big light bulb sort of moment for a lot of people, is that you don't have to actually complain to talk about problems here. And this is a specific act that I see over and over and over again, where people are trying to resolve their relationship issues and it's pushing their partner further away. And it's unfortunate, especially because a lot of times the problem that people are trying to resolve is this intimacy. And in the process of complaining about there not being intimacy, you are pushing your partner further away. I want to like kind of really illustrate this. And I like to compare these sort of situations to a brand new relationship. So Heather, I want you to take a moment and imagine if you and Ben had just started dating and you got upset about something and you went to Ben and you just started talking about all the things that he had done wrong on, say, the last date that you'd been on, and, you know, telling him how he needs to fix things or else, and, you know, demanding what he needs to do. That sounds like a really odd, crazy sort of scenario, doesn't it?
Right. It would definitely push him away. It would put the relationship in such a tenuous place that I'm not sure it would lead to, you know, continuing, let alone marriage.
Exactly. And so we say, okay, well, it wouldn't make sense in a brand new relationship to approach problems like that. But for some reason, we seem to think that, okay, since we're married, these sort of things are okay. It's for some reason, the expectations for how we treat each other, we seem to get a little bit more and more relaxed, the more comfortable we get. And honestly, that doesn't really work. You know, a lot of people, even if you've been married for a long time, still like to be treated like a normal person.
Right.
So yeah, making complaints when you're trying to make changes is going to push your partner further away. The other thing that you should not be doing here, even if you are able to talk, and this is specifically if your partner is pulling away, if intimacy is a big concern here, that you don't feel close, you should not be pushing for your own needs and objectives. And I, you know, as much as I am an advocate for speaking up for yourself and having self-respect and setting appropriate boundaries, there is going to be a better time and a place for that than when you were trying to increase intimacy and draw your partner back in.
Exactly. We've talked about this before in some of our master classes, like the 6 basic human emotional needs. And I know probably a lot of you are listening to this and you're like, well, I have a really strong need for physical connection, but my partner won't let me touch them and they don't like to snuggle and they don't want to be sexually intimate. And what do I do? Like, I feel like I'm just not getting my needs met, right? We talk a lot about how when people don't get their needs met, then they tend to scramble and they are desperate to get that need met so they can feel fulfilled, so they can feel safe. And we each have different emotional needs, right? Some are stronger than others, right? For me, I have a high need for growth. My husband has a high need for comfort, okay? So if you're gonna talk about intimacy and being on opposite ends of the spectrum, comfort and growth rarely go together. I'm always like pushing the limit and getting outside the comfort zone, and it can be very threatening to him. And so if he's gonna push for comfort, that could, and it has in our relationship, been threatening to my need for growth. Whereas my need for growth and pushing to get outside the comfort zone, if I feel like we're not doing enough, we're not moving enough, then I feel anxiety, right? Which is silly, but I do. Then that's threatening to him. And so here is a really awesome, awesome question that we got here from a Thriving Marriage member. I would like to hear conversation starters regarding this, like some examples of how we could do it without complaining and without just pushing for our own needs. Because like Mark said, if you just start pushing for your own needs first, if your spouse is pulling away, it's just going to push them further away. So I'm going to start here with our golden question. And then Mark, if you want to add anything to that, feel free. But for me, like one of the most powerful questions, and if you know what this is, if you've been following us for a while, then you're going to guess it, which is great because you're a great student. But the golden question is, what do you mean? So when they say, you know, I don't like you touching me. I just don't want to be touched right now. Well, what do you mean? I just feel like we're not doing enough. I feel like we aren't growing enough. I feel like we're not like expanding. I feel like we're not really working on our goals or our vision. That's mine, right? Well, what do you mean? I feel like we're just running too fast. I feel like I just need a break. I feel like things are a little out of control, and I need some space. I just need to kind of slow down. Well, what do you mean, right? That question right there opens the door. Instead of immediately assuming what our partner thinks, right, then we are able to ask that question, and asking open-ended questions is what's really going to help to get that conversation started. So for me, I always, and Ben does this too, we actually laugh and kind of like smirk at each other every time we ask this, like, well, what do you mean? It means I don't really understand you, but I want to understand you. So let's talk about it so that I can understand where you're coming from.
So in terms of other conversation starters, it's something that I try to hammer in over and over and over again with the people that I'm working with is, you know, instead of making complaints, you know, instead of discussing what's going wrong, you discuss what's wanted instead. I really like to, and for those who've worked with me, probably heard this before, I like to apply the dead man test in terms of requests or goals. And if a dead man can accomplish what you are requesting here, it's probably, it's a junky request, or it's a garbage goal. So like, if you're saying you need to stop, you need to stop disrespecting me, you need to stop just sitting there, you know, and do something. Well, in terms of like stopping disrespecting you, well, a dead man is going to do that pretty well. He's going to sit there and he's not going to disrespect you. That's probably not a good place to start. If you're complaining about, you know, how they're lazy and they, you know, and there needs to be things done around the house. Well, doing things around the house is a little bit better if you're requesting that. But if you're saying you need to stop being lazy, there's this complaint. You know, a dead man is going to. Well, I guess stop being lazy is that's not a good example, but you guys get what I mean. It's much better to focus in on what is wanted instead of what's going wrong. You know, an example of this, let's say that you are needing support. You could come to your spouse and say, you know, I'm really upset. You should have been there for me. You know, all you had to do was lift a finger here and I would have been okay. That's going to really put your partner on the defensive, and it's going to decrease that intimacy there, that sense of closeness or safety. But if you're saying, you know what, I'm really feeling stressed right now, and I'm going to say, here's some emotion, you know, giving some emotional context is good. I'm really feeling stressed right now, and I would really appreciate some support. What are some areas that you can, you know, where are some areas that you could give me some support here? Is a much better way to approach that situation. You know, you might be saying, well, this is pushing for your own needs and objectives. And you really have to read the situation to say where, you know, where you might be able to do that. But I'm saying, in terms of making complaints, complaints are just all the time gonna, it's not gonna get you anywhere. And talking about what you want instead is going to go much further. Now, if we had to incorporate that other piece there, you know, instead of, you know, we're saying don't really push for your own needs and objectives when your partner is pulling away, you can still take that same situation and say, hey, look, it looks like you're needing some time to yourself. It looks like you need some time to relax. I'm looking to have some support. How can we have both of these things go on? Where, you know, can I give you some time to relax, and then can you give me some support a little bit later? You know, can we both relax together right now, and then maybe we can get to work on things? It's that looking for, you know, ways to incorporate what your partner wants into this conversation that's really going to help them feel heard and understood and get them more engaged in the conversation, help them feel safe actually talking through it.
Right. So we got a comment here. So essentially the law of attraction, rather than focus on what I don't want, ask for things I want to see happening. And that is exactly it. You understand the law of attraction perfectly. Instead of fixating and focusing on the things that are going wrong, focus on the things that you want to be going right. And as you put your energy and your focus there, then you allow those things to happen in your life. And it is beautiful in your marriage, because you're going to shift from maybe being really nagging or contentious, really bitter or complaining to, let's focus on working on as a team. And I want to understand you. I want to meet your needs. And can we work together to, so I meet your needs and then you meet mine. And then it brings it kind of into balance. But like Mark said, we don't want to do that if they're pulling away, because if we're pushing too much for our own needs, then we have to make sure we wait a little while. We do. We have to, and it stinks. I know. And I know that's frustrating to a lot of people, but you can work together as a team in some situations. And in some situations, you need to wait a little while and then bring the relationship back into balance, because we definitely want to make sure that both parties are getting needs met.
Yeah, I would say your ability to ask for things yourself is going to increase a whole lot if your partner feels like you're making some efforts to understand them and help support them in what they want. I would say that goes short term and long term here. You know, maybe things are really rough right now and you do need to, you know, really focus in on your partner. But I think just a little bit of effort, a little bit of time with that would give you the opportunity to at least start making some smaller requests if things are really strained.
Yeah. And another note that you just made here, Mark, was that make sure you don't make them feel guilty for being closed off. There's a reason why we do that, right? It's a self-preservation technique, right? We feel threatened, we feel insecure, so we close ourselves off. And so if your partner's doing that, the last thing you want to do is make them feel guilty for what they feel like they need to do to preserve themselves, because that's only going to push them further away too, right? And so giving them some grace and some understanding about why they're doing that is going to help them feel safe and feel like they can open up more. So let's talk a little bit more now about what to do. So we talked about what not to do. Let's talk about what to do so we can get some real actionable steps to help heal intimacy distancing, if that's what's going on.
I feel like this is going to really apply here. There's another comment here, you know, saying that these sort of things, it doesn't get the conversation started when the other person never shares their concerns. Well, I think some of these suggestions might help. You know, especially if someone's closed off, you're going to want to just make some observations. Observe how your partner is feeling. I will tell my clients this, if the partner is super closed off, not talking at all, you can sometimes get this flowing a little bit just by making some observations. Sometimes my wife, Jen, has, you know, she might be really upset and she'll, you know, I'll ask her what's wrong. And she'll say, everything's fine. And I can tell by her body language and her tone that everything is not fine in that moment. And I can imagine then, you know, in situations where that's the continual pattern, in a marriage, where that's taken to an extreme level, where they, where someone just really shuts down like that. But even in those situations, because Jen and I are used to having these discussions, all it really needs is a little bit of a nudge. And I say, you know what, I notice here that you seem really upset. You are, your tone is this, and, I might just start making some observations. And I'm not going to say that just a simple observation like this is immediately going to open everyone up. But what you're doing there is you're making their feelings acceptable. And that's the second tip there, is make feelings acceptable and understandable. If you can say, hey, look, I noticed that you're feeling upset. I notice that your tone is really strained, that your body, you're really closed off with your body language. You seem like everything is not okay. And just by making those observations, it's immediately more safe. Like, the feeling is out there in the open and no one's reacting. No one's acting crazy about it. No one's acting really upset. And it's exactly what you want if you're trying to open things up. As we mentioned before, I would start discussing what's wanted instead of what's not wanted. And so even if your partner's like, don't talk to me, I don't want to, get away from me, you can even redirect that a little bit. Say, okay, it seems like you're really needing some time alone and you're needing some space, and I would love to give you that. So I'm going to back off for a bit now. And you're almost like aligning yourself with the very goals that they're trying to express in a healthy, they're trying to express, but they're just not doing it in a healthy way. If you can get them to talk about, what I would say is make it a discussion rather than a list of demands. Much what we were talking about before. Talk about what you want rather than what you don't want. And in this case, even talking about what you want, if you're making demands, that's not the direction you want to go in. We want to make that a discussion. Like, hey, I would really like to, get out and do something active today. I want to know if you want to join me. And, I want to see how you're doing with everything. You're making it more of a discussion. But yeah, those really closed off people, ones that don't want to talk, there are reasons why they are like that. And you need to do some of those more rudimentary steps consistently about making some of their feelings safe before they're going to really spill everything out.
Love it. And this absolutely works. I mean, we see it all the time when you can make this shift from pushing and demanding, demanding conversations to, giving them the space that they need, at making that a common goal, showing that understanding really increases that safety and that feeling like I can share, I can be safe here, and really starts to rebuild that connection.
I'm seeing several more comments about wanting conversation starters. Now, I know, Heather, we've done trainings on conversation starters. I know I've written multiple things, at least on conversation starters. I'm trying to remember where people could even find stuff like that. I don't think it's in the podcast, is it?
Yeah, we have like our 7 conversation starters, and then with our in our course we have like 20 something conversation starters. But I'll just make it really easy. If you want some more conversation starters, then join our newsletter and I'll make sure that I send them to you. As well as, I'm gonna go to our little plug here at the end that I was gonna share, but no, I'll save it for the end, but just do it now. If you want the conversation starters, then you can go to relationshipreboot.com/joinpodcast. I know it's a really long thing, so I'm going to put it in the chat here, but it's relationshiprebootcourse.com/joinpodcast, and then you can join our newsletter, and I'll make sure you get some conversation starters, and I'm also going to throw in a really cool thing at the end. So there, now you have to listen to the end. All right, so let's talk about pushing the limits a little bit here, Mark, and what that means and why we do that in the right way.
So you know, the whole theme of the podcast, we're talking about big differences in intimacy. I'm assuming those listening really want more intimacy, and your partner probably doesn't want to get close right now. So, and with that in mind, I think you need to keep in mind where your partner, where your partner is at, and think tiny steps instead of really big steps. I can't tell you how many times that I've seen mistakes happen where, you know, the person I'm working with is wanting more intimacy. They see a little step forward from their partner and they pounce on it. They're like, okay, now we're going to get out on dates and we're going to do all these things. And I'm going to say, you might be ready for a lot more, but if they aren't, it can be really damaging to push intimacy. And I'm, once again, I'm going to go back to compare this to like a very new relationship. And let's put you in the same sort of circumstances. If this is a brand new relationship and your brand new girlfriend or boyfriend is saying, you know, I want to keep things a little bit slow, and you're saying, no, we need to, you know, move in right now, we need to go sleep together right now, or else, that sounds really creepy. And for some reason, we drop that in marriage. We say, well, no, we're married now. I need to be able to have that intimacy. And without really considering where your partner is at. You know, if you actually want to get to those deeper levels of intimacy, whether that's emotional or physical, you need to stretch things a little bit at a time. And what you know, your goal there then is you stretch it a little bit, and then you make those new limits safe and rewarding and enjoyable, instead of complaining that it hasn't gone further.
Which, what gets praised gets repeated. Just going to put that plug there. What gets praised gets repeated. If you can put as much positive energy into the good behaviors that they're doing, even if they're small, I mean, not like exaggeratingly so, like not like ridiculously so, but just saying, you know, I really appreciated that you took time to do this, or I appreciated that you handled it this way, right? And we praise the behavior that we're wanting to see from our partner, we're going to see a lot more of it.
So I'm going to point out something here. My wife and I, we watch a show, we watch Outlander together. It's a very, it's a drama, romance oriented thing. It's not the kind of show that I would normally watch on my own. But I'll tell you, every time that we watch that, Jen is very snuggly. She tells me how much she appreciates that I watch that with her. You know, she'll make comments about feeling supported. Like, she knows that it's not, you know, it wouldn't be my favorite show, but I enjoy it because I see how much it does for her, that I'm there with her. And so it becomes enjoyable. And so I'm motivated to do that more. And I mean, this is sure watching a television show, but we can have the same thing apply in other directions, and with other things. You know, this sort of thing here, like Heather was saying, you know, it's, I can't, what was the exact phrase that you used?
What gets praised gets repeated.
Yes, that. and so you really need to make, you know, if you're going to stretch this a little bit, praise it, appreciate it, you know, even give a little bit back when things are pushed forward. This sort of thing is, you know, this is how a normal relationship starts off and develops. And, you know, I can remember my first date. I was a bit nervous asking Jen out, but because she was excited to go out on the date, because I got a lot of good feedback. She said, I really enjoyed this. She snuggled up against me during the movie that we went to go see. She said we should do this again sometime. You know, lots of little things that said, hey, this was a good experience. Well, it made it easier for me to go a little bit further and then a little bit further and ask her out again and then, you know, develop the relationship further. And the same sort of approach is needed when there's been a big break in the relationship or there's been a lot of intimacy lost. So that's how you go about this, and don't push for what you used to have too soon.
Yep, that is the trap. We get this expectation that because we're married now, like you said, that it should be this way. You should do this for me. You should do that for me. And I like what Tony Robbins says, watch out for your shoulds, because you're going to should yourself all over the place. So make sure that you shift from your expectation to appreciation. And that's what's really going to change your life and heal your marriage.
Heather, I'm just going to point out, I meant to say this right at the beginning, but I will have an appointment on the hour, so we'll need to wrap up. Yeah, I should have said this before we started, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I think we're getting to the end here.
Let's jump into our marriage mythbuster. So the marriage mythbuster today is your true love will automatically know what to say and do to make you happy. I'm going to raise my hand that I've been there. I have done this. I've felt before like, well, Ben should just know that that bothers me. Ben should just know that this is what I need right now. And if he loved me, he would know that. And so he must not care about me. I've done that. Okay. So I'm raising my hand here. I'll be the first to admit that I have done this in the past. So where does this really come from, Mark, and why is this a myth?
I can get it. This especially it comes from those people who are a lot more aware and who are trying to read into things, or perhaps it was instilled in them as a child there to say, okay, well, you know, you should be looking out for your brother or your sister, or you should, you know, there's some sort of message somewhere along the line that says, I should be an observant person and I should notice feelings and I should anticipate this. And so I'm not saying that like necessarily that it's coming from a bad place. I imagine the people who make this complaint are probably those very observant people who notice feelings in other people. It's either that or, you know, we'll just go with that. So it's this idea that true love, if they actually loved me, they should be able to anticipate this. And, you know, I'm going to say that it's this is actually, you know, there's a list of what are called cognitive distortions. These are common errors in thinking. And up on most of those lists are shoulds. You know, if you're talking, Tony Robbins talks about this. But also this idea of mind reading, either other people should know, you know, that I'm upset or should be able to read my mind, or I know what other people are thinking. I know what their intentions are. I know what their motives are. And both of these are on the common list of cognitive distortions because both of those cause problems. Well, why should they have known? What should they have known? And how would they have actually known that? It's this idea that it should happen. There's like this expectation that actually causes the problems. If you actually want better communication, if you want your partner to know your feelings a bit better, if you want them to know what to do to make you happy and it's not happening, it's not because of some deficit. It just means that maybe you need to communicate that a little bit better. But, you know, ultimately it comes down to a few things. Like, you know, they say they should have known that I was unhappy. They should have known that I wanted something more in life. They should have known that it was upsetting how distant we were. And in many cases, what's going on is the message just simply isn't coming across clearly enough. Perhaps you have a spouse who's just not very emotionally observant, emotionally intelligent, which they might have other strengths, but that isn't the one that they have. It isn't, I'm not even saying that you can't even build that up. It's just, you know, they might have other things to focus in on. The idea is really rooted, I think, though, in perspective, that a lot of us believe that others think, feel, and believe that the way that we do, or else they're wrong. Like, they should have known this is the way things are. And for an example of this, I want you to look at, say, politics. Or culture or family traditions and upbringing. And a lot of people who are, you know, in politics, they say, well, the way I think is absolutely correct. You know, in the United States is the Democrats and Republicans. You know, the Democrats, they're the good ones, or the Republicans are the good ones, and the other side, they're so greedy and evil and self-serving. And if you think otherwise, you're just wrong. Or, you know, my culture, the way we do things, the way we treat each other, the way we greet each other, that's the right way of doing things. Or my religion is the, or my family traditions, this is the right way of doing things. The thing is, even after decades together, even after that long, you're still going to have differences. You're still going to have different upbringings. You're going to have, and, you know, after decades together, you still need open communication to actually effectively for your partner to know how to make you happy. I would say, you know, my Jen and I are approaching 15 years together. I still have to talk to her sometimes if I want to know what she wants. And this is coming from someone, you know, Jen and I are very, very open about how we feel and what our goals are. And I still can't read her mind.
Dang it. And we said, yeah.
Huh? Sorry. It isn't reasonable. And
no, it's reasonable. And you know, it would honestly take the fun out of it. It would take out a lot of the drama and the chaos too. I get that, but it would take the fun out of it. We can grow closer together by learning to understand each other than if we could just simply read each other's minds.
Yeah. So if you're seeing that your partner doesn't immediately see why you're upset, it may not be because of a deficit in them. You just might need some clearer communication. That's it.
Thank you. Myth has been busted. So if you're expecting your partner to read your mind and you get upset when they don't automatically know what you need and you think it's because they don't care about you, then stop it. I'm going to get all Heather on you now. All right. So we have some awesome comments here. And if you're still wondering, like some of these people are here, you know, I've been, you know, we've been separated for a year. She says that she can't go back and that she's done. I need to know how to change her narrative. We even had a comment about, you know, if you've been abused in the past and physical intimacy, physical touch is really hard for you. How do you handle and overcome some of those bigger challenges? Well, we really take it on a case by case situation. We gave you the high level overview today, but it's really crucial that you get the right kind of diagnose and, plan, like a, you know, like a treatment plan for your marriage specifically, because what's going to apply to one person and one couple may or may not apply to your exact situation. So that's why we always encourage you to have a completely free complimentary consultation with us. And you can do that over at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And I also wanted to gift you guys as a thank you for joining us and a thank you for, coming in and wanting to work on your marriage, listening to the podcast, doing your very best to apply things. So for everyone, we want to be able to give to you not only those 7 conversation starters that we talked about earlier, but drumroll, we're going to gift you our Ignite Your Intimacy course. This is a course that Mark and I created several years ago, talking specifically about how to really increase intimacy in your marriage. So to get that, again, you're going to join our podcast newsletter, so you always are aware of when podcasts come out, and you'll get that completely free intimacy course that we've never given out for free before as a thank you to you guys. And you can do that over at relationshiprebootcourse.com/joinpodcast. relationshiprebootcourse.com/joinpodcast. I am going to work on that URL and make it better in the future. But for now, that's the one that actually works. So anyway, thank you so much, Mark. Thank you for joining us, everyone, and appreciate you. Make sure that you focus on what you want above all. Focus on what you want. If you have one takeaway, focus on what you want and work together towards that. You can get there. So thank you, Mark. Next week, we're going to share with you how to overcome loneliness in your marriage, which I know a lot of us are struggling with loneliness during COVID and loneliness in general. So we're going to share with you how to do that. Thank you, Mark, and we will talk to you all next time.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.